Welcome back in to Bullseye on the Afternoon on AM 930 WEOL and 100.3 FM. Andy Bullbarch with you, and we are going to head right back to the hotline to launch right into our Budweiser's From the Sidelines segment. It's presented by North Ridgeville Convenient Sunoco on Center Ridge and Barton Roads. We welcome in John Telich with Fox 8. JT, a pleasure as always, my friend. How are you on this frigid Wednesday afternoon?
I am enjoying the fact that at least this morning we had sunshine, so I'll take that. But, man, it's getting a little bit nippy out there, my friend.
Yeah, yes, it is. But you know what? It's almost mid-December now here in the greater Cleveland area, so I guess we shouldn't come to expect anything different. But, well,
exactly.
Another week and another laundry basket full of drama for the Cleveland Browns. And, well, what you would think would be a week that would be celebrated to some degree because the Browns did indeed win on Sunday, but boy, the general consensus coming away from that contest on Sunday didn't feel like a winning atmosphere to me anyways, and you take a look at so many different elements from that contest on Sunday. In the second half, it certainly seemed like Freddie Kitchens learned his lesson and started to run the ball more consistently, and JT, let's hope that that's something we see more of in the final few weeks of the season.
Gosh, you would imagine that would be the case, Bull. I mean, everybody in the stadium knew it. Everybody saw the numbers. Everybody saw, I think Nick Chubb had just three carries in that first half. Everybody noticed that you were trying to push things downfield, trying to be successful in that area, but neglecting to use, and it was a tight game, but neglecting to use this incredible weapon that they have in Nick Chubb. So, obviously, the guy doesn't sit there and look through social media at halftime. He and his coaches knew they would have to run the football, and they came out in that third quarter series and just concentrated 100% on that, and you saw the result. You had that 57-yard run. Next thing you know, boom, they're in the end zone. So it would seem to me most of the games they played this year have not been where they've been down by huge deficits and you have to abandon the run altogether. Most of the games have been fairly tight, or they've even been in the lead. So it was good to see that they used Nick. It wasn't a ton of times, but it was enough. I think he had 15 carries somewhere in that neighborhood, went over 100 yards, continues to show that he's absolutely one of the top players in the league. And he was impressive, and I think just knowing that you have two weapons in Chubb and Kareem Hunt just would make you think to be that type of a team, a running team, a run-dominant team. And in some instances, they seem to be like one extreme ball towards the other extreme and nothing in between sometimes.
Safe to say that in your mind, Nick Chubb would be an absolute lock for the Pro Bowl this season based on the way he's played so far?
Yeah, I absolutely think he's one of the top three backs in the league right now. He gives you speed. He has great vision. I think a lot of what he's done this year has been from seeing just a right way to attack a hole and to get that extra 7-8 yards when he was only going to get one or two. And there's been numerous carries like that. He had a bunch of 8 to 9 to 10 yard runs on Sunday along with that 57-yarder. He has wonderful vision. He's so powerful. It seems like people are just strewn, across a road as a car is blowing past them and knocking all the debris on the road. That's what the players seem to be, as he just blows past them, or has guys on his back or people underneath him like he's a road grader. So much power, speed, quickness, vision, unselfish. Very good at knowing that if his job is to block, he'll give everything that he's got. He's the guy you build the Cleveland Browns around. That's the guy you focus on. That's the guy you show to the rest of the world. This is the kind of football player we want to have on our team, and this is the type of player that is necessary on the team in order for the Browns to be successful.
On the surface, he really seems to be one of the only guys on this team where there doesn't appear to be a whole lot of nonsense surrounding him, but that's not something you could say for a lot of the guys on this roster, unfortunately, at this point. Odell Beckham Jr., for the longest time, it sure looked like he was saying and doing the right things, but now these reports have surfaced throughout the last 6 days or so about how other folks in the league have stated that he sent them a message to come and get me. It's really become a little concerning here over the last few days, especially when you look at what he said on Sunday when he had every opportunity to dispel those rumors, and he didn't do that at all.
Yeah, he had his response ready. In fact, I happen to be the guy in the locker room that asked him about both his hernia situation and whether or not he needed surgery, and then asked him about the Jay Glazer the Glazer report saying that he's been telling people around the league, come get me and all that stuff. He had the response ready for the Glazer thing. He just did not want to contribute to that off-the-field stuff. When if he's been doing this, just own up to it, or if he was not doing that, that would have been a perfect opportunity, Bull, for him to say, I don't know where this stuff is coming from. I like it here in Cleveland. It's been a tough year, injuries, playing through injuries, all that type of stuff. And then here we are now 13 games in, and we're going to finish out the season as strong as possible and maybe make the playoffs. He just seems to attract a lot of speculation about what he is going to do next. And I was thinking about that, stay or go. Some people are incredibly emotional about the fact that, well, if he's been saying he's unhappy, then I don't want this guy within 50 miles of Berea. And then there are other people that are saying, okay, there's, at what he's being paid and his production, knowing that he's been hurt for the most part, and at this stage in his career and with word out there about all the off-the-field issues, what are they really going to get for him? Can't they actually make one of these seemingly untenable relationships actually work? Is that a possibility? Because in Cleveland, you're either with the sports stars here, you're enjoying them when they begin their careers. Frankie Lindor is a great example of that. LeBron was LeBron 1.0 before he went to Miami, knowing that there was a great possibility that they would leave. You also know that other stars that are doing well in those other sports have opportunities to leave, like Lindor, and we can go throughout the history of the Indians, or we can go through the history of the Cavaliers. And then here you have a premier athlete coming here pretty much in the prime of his career. I know he was coming off a couple of years where there were instances and injuries and things of that nature, but still a very, top caliber talent. Why can't you make something like this work? Let's put the onus on Freddie and the coaching staff on doing what they can to make this work. I'm not advocating they fire everybody so they keep Odell Beckham. That's absolutely idiotic. But is there a way that you can finesse your way through this and still build that relationship? Because if this guy's really been dealing with a hernia situation or hip and groin, which has been the case most of the year, and for him to be at 844 yards and half the world upset, that's really somewhat unfair. I mean, he's not getting Michael Thomas numbers. Nobody is. But here's a guy at 59 catches, 844 yards, a couple of touchdowns, certainly under his, what you come to expect from him. But if you add in that this guy's barely practicing, he's basically Joe Thomasing himself through each week, and Joe Thomas is going to the Hall of Fame when he didn't really practice much because it took everything within his power and the medical staff and the training staff's power to get him on the football field each week. And now you've got a situation where OBJ is not practicing much, losing that synchronicity with the quarterback, and yet everybody in the world wants this guy gone or shipped off to the quickest suitor to come by and try to grab him. So I just wonder if there's a way to work it out. I'm not a crisis counselor. I'm not a therapist. I just wonder if there's some way to work this thing out.
Again, we're being joined by Fox 8's very own John Telich on our Budweiser's From the Sidelines segment presented by North Ridgeville Convenience Sunoco. All right, JT, let's transition to the defensive side of the ball. While the Browns did surrender a lot of yards on the ground, they did some special things in that secondary. Finally, a pick six in this game. Big news for that for the Browns defense.
Well, they faced they were on the field for 72 snaps. And so that was a busy day on the defensive side of the ball. I know it's the Bengals, and people will, you know, kind of slant how they look at their performance because of that. But they faced 72 snaps. They kept the opposition to under 20 points, good enough to win the game, giving up 19 points. And they've been preaching turnovers, fumble recoveries, things of that nature. And I know that they were challenging Denzel Ward. The defensive coaches were challenging Denzel to go get one. And it seemed like it was one of those games. It was like a ricochet game, wasn't it? There were several plays that, in fact, there was one that was a bing, bong, bing. It literally went between two different players before the third person got it. And this was a case where it was a deflection. Denzel was in the right spot. You see his speed that he has, and he gets to the end zone. That's great to see. He is a ball hawk. He has great sense about where the ball is at times. There's sometimes when he's playing blanket coverage on a guy, he doesn't turn in time. I know he's playing the reaction from the receiver, and some real good catches have been made against him, but that was good for Denzel. I don't think he's a Pro Bowl guy right now this year because he's been injured and been off the field, and there have been plays made against him. But that was a good thing for him. He was really, and we spoke with him after the game, really happy and lit up a lot just talking about that play. So that's good to see. Maybe you feed off of that and get more of those types of plays as you go down the road.
Well, another guy it seems like this defense kind of feeds off of is middle linebacker or inside linebacker Joe Schobert. And I think the talk about Joe Schobert has been, for the most part, centered around his incredible play this season. But now that kind of turns into, are they going to pay him and should he get an extension? All signs point to yes at this point. However, we really haven't heard a whole lot from either side on this.
Yeah, he was talking with reporters and said he hasn't had much dialogue on the possibility of a contract. It certainly would make all the sense in the world to get him a deal, but for some reason right now there either hasn't been much talked about or just nothing's getting done. I think they have to realize that you can't keep doing this of allowing players to leave that have been pretty productive and then trying to bring in your idea of someone that's better. Sometimes you should just enjoy the fact that you've got a productive player and then build off of that. There's no salary cap issue. Plus, the salary cap's going up another $10 million, I believe, for next year. So there should be no issues there. I know they have to be mindful going down the road whether or not they're when they're going to have to pay Baker, they're going to have to pay Denzel, they're going to have to pay Myles Garrett and what have you. But a little perplexed that there hasn't been a lot of discussion, but again, I don't know if it's something you can sit here in early December and flip your wig over. Just kind of let it play out.
It'll be fascinating to see what they do in the offseason because he certainly seems as though he's the kind of guy the Browns definitely do not want to let go of and let him go into the open market. All right, JT, we'll take a look at some of the comments made by Baker Mayfield as well, because what would a Browns discussion be without talking about Baker Mayfield or, as you and some others have deemed him, Dr. Baker, based on the comments he made about the Browns medical staff, a huge no-no. Now, he did walk some of that back, apologizing on Twitter, but, boy, that's not a real good look for a quarterback to throw the medical staff under the bus.
No, it really wasn't, and he obviously realized right away that it wasn't a smart thing to do. And plus, you also heard a few days later J.C. Treader talking about what a great job the Browns medical slash training people do, because a year ago he had that high ankle sprain. He had issues. He has issues this year that they're doing. That staff is doing wonderful work in getting him on the field. And I also think J.C. Treader is just one of those guys with high tolerance for discomfort, and he's not going to come off the field. He's kind of like an Iron Man as far as that was concerned. So it was a little weird. I didn't hear it firsthand because I'm always in the locker room talking to the players. I'm not at the podium situation. So I spend the whole time in the locker room. And so I didn't hear Baker's. I saw the comments later when P.J. Ziegler and I hooked up after those sessions. And I was a little, I know Baker's outspoken. I know, he doesn't edit sometimes what he is going to say. But I think he realized right off the bat, and a default could probably be amongst a lot of different parties. If Odell's needed hernia surgery, we don't know specific. Odell has said as much, or it's been intimated that he's been dealing with a hernia that he more than likely is going to have surgery on, but we don't know this for a fact just yet. You won't learn about something like this until usually, you know, a day or two after the surgery takes place, a team will come out with an announcement of some sort saying that one of their players had this type of surgery performed at that certain location with this type of a doctor and what have you. So we don't know, but we know that there's been something going on with OBJ, that the medical staff has done everything they can to get him on the field and make him productive. So it was a little disconcerting to hear that, but Baker, again, as I mentioned, he just does not seem to have an edit button there, and he says what's on his mind, and certainly that was on his mind, maybe just trying to back his guy, OBJ, just trying to be there for knowing and seeing firsthand maybe the pain that he's been in or what measures they were taking day in and day out to get him healthy and to get him on the field. Just don't know, but I think he realized pretty quickly you better walk those comments back.
Well, and looking ahead to this Sunday, for the Browns, their second-to-last road game of the season, they head on down to Arizona to take on the Cardinals, and it'll be a really interesting matchup. You know, Baker Mayfield going up against a guy that sat behind him for a couple of years, and Murray over in Oklahoma. So this will be a really interesting matchup to take a look at here, and I think there's going to be an extra amount of importance placed on trying to keep Murray outside the pocket.
Yeah, he is such a great scrambler. He's got such quickness, lateral, just like, you know, he's a smaller version, I guess, of Lamar Jackson, but with a very good arm. But what's been kind of crazy, at least looking at how this year has gone so far, inside the pocket, this little guy at, you know, 5'10 or 5'9", 5'10", whatever his official height is, his QBR, his quarterback rating, is like top 10 in the league inside the pocket. You would think, you know, how does he see? What about the passing lanes? But it's top 10 in the league. When he gets outside of the pocket, which I thought would be the better way, you know, for him, because he can see more clearly. He's quick enough to set his feet on the run and still throw the ball. He's like bottom five. And so you would assume the Browns would be okay with him trying to make throws on the run. I'm not so sure there, because obviously it depends on what type of coverage they're in. If he's out running around and these guys are playing man, he may have an opportunity to just, you know, fake throws and just run, you know, for chunk plays any time that he wants to. So, you know, will they have a spy? Will they mix up their coverages a little bit? However they attack him, it's just interesting to note that he is, you know, in the top 10 quarterback rating when he's inside the pocket with his small stature. Crazy.
Yeah, it is wild. You're right, because that's the polar opposite about what you think about a quarterback with that style of play. But one thing is for sure, it'll be a really interesting matchup as the Browns travel to play a team that's struggling right now, and the Browns trying to inch back closer to that 500 hump. Well, they can win as many as 9. They can lose as many as 10 this year. This has been a strange season for the Browns. One thing's for certain, though, this season has not been short of storylines, JT.
It's just going to be wild. So, you know, late afternoon on Sunday, I think it's going to make for some interesting TV. And the Browns have obviously a microscopic playoff chance right now, and I don't think that changes. Even if Pittsburgh or, you know, the teams ahead of them win this Sunday, it still keeps the Browns, again, on life support, if you will, playoff-wise, but at least some kind of a chance. And I think you want to win out just for the sake of, vindicating, maybe validating some of the things that you did this year that you can carry over into next year. And I'm sure in future spots here we can talk about Freddie. But I think we've kind of talked ourselves out in some regard about Freddie for most of this year. So, you know, I'm just interested to see how they play Sunday. Enjoy watching the game and see if the very little hair I have to begin with on Sunday afternoon remains the same after that game.
Yeah, you and me both, my friend. You and me both. All right, JT, a pleasure as always, my friend. You enjoy the weekend, and we'll do this again next week.
I look forward to it. Thanks, Bull. Have a good one.
Thanks, JT. You do the same. Again, that's Fox 8's very own John Telich joining us on our Budweiser's From the Sideline segment presented by North Ridgeville Convenience Sunoco. Let's step aside and take a break. We'll come back with more after this here on AM 930 WEOL and 100.3 FM.